Hey everyone. Hey, welcome to Founders Live Conversations. I am Nick Hughes. I'm the founder and CEO of Founders Live. And I'm excited today to bring a special guest on this Founders Live Conversations. We have Martha Santos joining us from Ryokan Instinct. Really, really excited. This is a special conversation to highlight a past winner of ours, as well as just hear about an amazing entrepreneurial story, an amazing story around, you know, creating things healthy, products for canines, for dogs, and for pets. And so excited. Martha, welcome to the conversation.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's so cool. This is fun. We're going to have a conversation here. And, you know, you are joining from my hometown, or our headquarters town of Seattle, Washington. You're over there in Bellevue, which is just right outside Seattle. But, you know, how are things? And, you know, it's nice to have you.
Yeah, busy, you know, entrepreneur life. I don't think there's another answer besides busy, but busy's better than not, like, having nothing to do, right? So good.
Busy is good. It's challenging at times, but I'm excited. So, you know, we're going to actually, you know, touch a lot of different areas of your journey and your experience at Founders Live, you know, pitching. You pitched in one at our Founders Live Bellevue event, which was recent. Excited. And then, hey, we're going to dive right into what you're building. But, you know, what would be awesome and great is if you could just give us a little bit of background on yourself, a little bit of catch us up to speed. Just introduce yourself.
Yeah. Yes, I'm Martha. Quick background about me is my background specifically was in cellular and molecular physiology. I got my doctorate at Stanford, and a lot of that knowledge was metabolic process, energy, proteins. I was familiar with active lifestyles. I also was a D1 collegiate athlete, so nutrition was really big when I was in college. And then we brought home our dog, and then we were going on all these hikes, live in Washington, and that's just kind of the intro into how I became obsessed with keeping my dog as healthy and active as possible.
Well, I'm excited to hear that story. And, you know, there's just a lot here on that. But, you know, I think a question I love to ask our founders as well is, you know, why entrepreneurship? You know, why we all could just go get a job, get paid, maybe, especially in Seattle, a pretty hefty salary. But, you know, we've all, as founders, at least, chosen to take this dive into entrepreneurship, create a brand and create a business. Why?
That's a good question, actually. I don't think I have the typical entrepreneurship answer. I don't think growing up, I dreamed necessarily of owning a business. I know a lot of my friends can attest to this. They will say that I jump from hobby to hobby. And when I get interested in a hobby, it's pretty consuming. It's borderline an obsession. So I have to get really exceptional at it before I can move on. And what I learned in this process of becoming an entrepreneur is that I really love learning. Like, I have this skill to learn things and absorb things. And although I didn't go into making this business becoming, or like really enveloping myself in the entrepreneur life, it really suits me. I enjoy the constant challenges, the constant learning, the adapting. It keeps me so engaged, interested, and yeah, I think that's the long and short of it.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, you know, it's an ability to, I mean, this is just, you know, me adding a little bit, but, you know, there's an amazing creativity in entrepreneurship.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Where, you know,
yeah,
you're creating a brand, you're creating a product.
Yeah. So my background was in sciences. And so I didn't really feel that I could exercise that muscle in a way that was enjoyable to me. Mm-hmm. So getting to apply the knowledge that I had and take a lot of those analytical skills and combine them with these creative skills, it's really fun. That's all I got.
It is. It's fun. But it's, you know, not, not without its absolute challenges. And I think that, you know, for people that maybe are listening or watching this, that, you know, might not have gone this far in this, you know, if you haven't started a company or you're not, you know, as far yet on that, you know, in the end, it then becomes there's challenges, and it starts and ends with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't look to a boss or like a, you know, bigger company to say, oh, they'll fix it. No, mm-hmm. The challenges and the issues end here. And so that's, I think it's a responsibility, and you got to step up and really take that, right?
Totally. Totally. Like it's an interesting thing. Just the personal, like the self-growth that comes with being an entrepreneur, because you're eventually going to have to face a lot of like your personal shortcomings and insecurities, and they start to bubble up in the ways of your business. And you have to learn how to not take it personally, because it will feel personal, mm-hmm. but you have to somehow get over your personal insecurities to be able to tackle these things in a level-headed way. So it's a really unique journey.
Thank you. I love how you said that. And it's just amazing. But, you know, moving on to your experience pitching at Founders Live, and this is just always fun to hear. So, you know, how did Founders Live come into your world? And then let's talk a little bit about the experience pitching at, you know, Founders Live Bellevue.
Yeah. So we were mostly just looking for like accelerators, incubators, grant opportunities, just anything to help us expose our business, get us connections, networking, because for the last year, we were just kind of operating this really like small bubble, and we didn't really have any professional connections. And so we realized that that's something we need to do if we were trying to grow larger than just our small online e-commerce website. And Founders Live came up, and I saw there was one in Bellevue, and it happened to be 3 weeks out. So I applied, since we also were trying to look at raising money for our business. And I figured it would be, if we didn't get chosen, it would be a good experience just to watch other people pitch. And then we ended up pitching.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it just popped up and it was an opportunity. And, you know, you have a really unique company and message. And so I thought that was, it's really, really great. It really fit you well. How about this? You know, maybe share a few tips and thoughts that people that might be thinking about pitching later, you know, you prepared for it. You ended up actually as the winner, and that's great. So what are one or two things you would share with people that were thinking about, the 99-second pitch as well?
Tips specifically for Founders Live, because I have good ones.
Yeah.
A big one is, put your thumb to the mic and hold it to your chin. That was the big thing I think set our business just a little bit over, because it was easier to hear us. That was a big one.
No, that is a big one. And you know, if you're watching or listening here, everyone, like, look, every place is different, and you know, you could be somewhere where there's no microphone, and you're, you know, we've done that a lot of times. You could be somewhere where there's a microphone, but it's with microphones, they're sometimes really hot, and then sometimes they're really light. And if someone has not had too much experience on stage with a mic, what happens is they go like this. Okay. And they just start talking, they lose all consciousness of what's going on, and they go, zoop, and all you can't hear anything.
Yeah. You know, that wasn't even my tip. That was actually Riffit's tip. He told us right before, like, we all started pitching, and I stuck it there. And when I was looking at the videos after, I was like, yep, it was definitely that tip that helped.
That's so good. All of a sudden people can't hear, and then they're like, wait, what is she saying? And then,
mm-hmm. yeah, so. It's really easy to talk with your hands. And when you're holding the mic, it goes away.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so then, what are your thoughts around, you know, how did you walk into your pitch and your message? We're going to really start talking about, Ryokan Instinct now, but even just with that pitch, you know, did you start with a story? Did you, you know, how did you actually craft that 99-second pitch?
Melissa from Story Fruition, big props to her. I love how candid she was when we did like our first initial meeting. We showed her like what we thought was a good pitch, and she was pretty quick to be like, nope. And I love that. I love that it was like no nonsense, and she was very straightforward about getting your message as clean and as clear as possible. So she really went for that emotional trigger at the beginning. She's like, how are you going to make people care? And so, yeah, we led in with the story where it's like, okay, you're hungry as a human. Is your dog hungry? Obviously. So why aren't you feeding them?
Right. Yeah. Lead with a story, tug on emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last few days I've been saying this more frequently with founders around pitching, and, you know, look, a lot of times we're building these companies, we're building these things that maybe orient around logic or data, right? And to us founders, it's just logical, of course. Like, yeah. Why would you not do this? But most people respond to emotion, right? So you were able to slide in that emotion, and people are like, oh, I get it. And why don't we just kind of slide right into Ryokan Instinct, and you know, lead with us through the why you started it, what problem did you fully see, and then we'll get into all this great stuff.
Yeah. Sorry, what was the first question? Like, what?
Yeah. What is it? I mean, talk to us about.
Yeah. So Ryokan Instinct is community-driven brand on a mission to elevate canine vitality through high-quality nutrition. And our main product, the way we mostly do that, our flagship product, is our Ruku bars, and they are canine energy bars. And they are formulated to combat common issues like energy depletion, muscle density loss, and joint deterioration. Sorry, what was the next question?
Yeah. So, you know, tell us a little bit about how you discovered if there was a problem. So it sounded like there was a story with your pitch, but like,
yes, sorry.
Where did this
go? I went into the script there and I lost where I was going. So obviously I'm like a big fan of canine nutrition, or I went all in. I was a crazy dog mom, the classic crazy dog mom. I wanted to keep my Shiba alive as healthy and thriving as long as possible. And yeah, so we were going on hikes, a lot more hikes in Washington. And I would bring his food. Sometimes it was kibble when we were still feeding him kibble. But we did eventually transition to raw. And raw food it's not portable. There's no way to feed it. And then on top of that, because he was an active dog, there were certain pieces of supplemental nutrition that were going to be lacking in his day-to-day food. And then I realized, okay, well, humans have protein bars, there's Clif bars, there's Kind bars, there's, if you go to any grocery store, you'll see this just laundry list of energy bars. So I went to our local pet supplier, went to the large chains like PetSmart, Petco, and there wasn't anything. There was no active bars formulated for active dogs specifically. And yeah, I thought that was kind of ridiculous considering dogs are associated with being active.
It is really strange, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, like, we could go down a whole rabbit hole, I guess, ironically, a animal hole around, geez, you know, like, why have they just been, oh, there's this type of food, the dry food, and you know, they've just barely been in some ways. And so you actually like realize, like, wait, what? You know, we get hungry too, we're active, we're on the trail, we have really amazing like packaged foods and all this.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, why is there not this? So I think that's amazing. This is a key when we walk through the world and we find you find the problems, right? Mm-hmm. So we got the problems, we're like, what? So what did you do next? you find a problem, but you're like, how do we make, so how did you go through the process, even the first couple steps of creating an actual like nutrition bar?
Well, I mean, at that point I was already making my dog's food myself. So making his snacks was just like a pretty easy thing. So I started doing the calculations for what his nutrition was at home and then what the calories he needed to burn was on our hikes. And I'm really interested in cooking and baking. So it wasn't really difficult for me to take just chunks of meat and turn it into strips. Yeah. So then that was like the first iteration of the bar. They were just like these strips. And there's like other products like that in the market that are like meat strips. But when I thought about wanting to make it accessible to more dogs, obviously other dogs have, there's a large range of sizes and activity levels. So you need to be really conscientious of the calories going into each bite. And there is no way to really track that in a strip. And then that's how we took the next step, and they look like chocolate bars now. So you can break off little pieces and know exactly how much you're feeding.
That's amazing. So, you know, just through trial and error in some ways, and a thought came to mind though, is like, look, you're creating food for not yourself. And so how did you QA and quality assurance tests and making sure that what you're creating is actually like digestible and healthy? How did you go down that road when you yourself or other people can't, you know, actually or I don't know if you were tasting it, but you know,
I mean, they're human grade. So I did try them just to make sure like they tasted what they tasted like. But I mean, they just tasted like unseasoned meat. So it wasn't too much. And my dog was already like a really, really picky dog, like so picky. So I knew if he ate it, it was going to be like pretty widely accepted. And then we would send bars out to some of like our dog friends and just be like, hey, did you want to try it? Go ahead and do this. And then I remember actually, it was kind of weird, but I remember taking like my dog's like poop, like collecting it and testing for like a specific compound to see like how much of the food had been like processed or fermented in a specific way. So I knew how much his body was like actually utilizing the nutrients. So, yeah, you know, so, I mean, I was pretty confident in our product.
Yeah. What steps do you need to take to get this into market? Is there an FDA type of regulation or what? How do you go about that?
Department of Ag is the one you have to go through for pet food. And as long as you're not selling over, I forget what it is, but it's an absurd amount. You don't have to go through an FDA. FDA is when you have like your own facility, but we make them in a commissary kitchen. So it's not, pet food's really not difficult to break into.
Yeah.
Or pet treats.
Well, let's talk about, you know, maybe let's just kind of go through future of health of pets. And, you know, of course, you focused on, you know, canines and dogs, and, you know, we'll talk about that later, where that's going to go. But, you know, what are your thoughts around, you know, creating healthy, obviously healthy food, but even the orientation and the origination of this idea was like being active and healthy outside of that. So maybe just talk to us a little bit about your vision of the, you know, pet health future.
I mean, I feel like it's looking really bright. We just came back. It was in August. We went to Super Zoo, the largest pet retailer trade show. And yeah, you can just see that the general trend for foods is to be cleaner, to be more health conscious. And it's not like kibble of old where they're just trying to get the nutritional content to a certain number, regardless of what ingredients gets it there. They're trying to be more mindful of what ingredients are going into our dogs, because there's a lot more studies and research showing that dogs benefit from these higher quality, more bioavailable ingredients. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like there's just more, we're conscientious about the health, like the actual being of the dog, right? Mm-hmm. We're conscientious, you know, a little more than just, hey, we're just going to give them something that just doesn't, mm-hmm. kill them, you know, maybe has a little bit of
nutrition. Yeah.
And this is really, really important. I'm not a pet parent yet, but there is a future for that. I actually, my life is not conducive to it. I travel quite a bit. And, but I'm in the window shopping phase. Okay.
Not a small dog. Small dogs can go on planes.
Small dogs and mix, they don't mix really well. And, any dog that I am very attracted to is like,
okay,
is like, you know,
has some weight to it. All right.
Here's what I say is I want one that can go on, you know, to go on the hike, can go on the like 3 to 5 mile run with me and be like the pal. And I know small dogs can do that in some ways, but I'm, you know, just a mid-sized to a larger dog is what I've always imagined. And, so I'm on the window shopping, but, I see it. And I, you know, whenever I see, you know, if I'm out in a park or I'm at a friend's house and I'm always talking to the dog. And so, you know, they're there. And I think going back to, I think we're, as a society, we're becoming more, I would say conscious and aware of the state of these pets and how they are feeling in their health. Right. And so I think that food, what's going in them, needs to be as high quality as possible. And so you're on the forefront of that.
Yeah, totally. I agree. So the name of our business is Ryokin, but that word, it actually means hunting dog in Japanese, because like our dog is a Shiba and Shibas were bred to be hunting dogs in Japan in like Edo time period. So samurais kind of viewed their hunting dogs as like companions, like their equals. They would like share their catches or their prey with them. And so I thought it was like a really cool encapsulation of how we're starting to view our dogs as like members of our family, not just like a pet. It's like our companion. That's our adventure buddy. That's our hiking buddy, you know?
So cool. Well, let's go out. Let's go out 10 years, you know? Yeah. I like to challenge people around this. Is it 10 years? Is it what we're looking for here is what is the kind of, what is the future and the vision of what you're creating and this brand? And, you know, brand, I love to use that word because it's not just a bar, you know, it's people trust, people will see the name and they trust your brand. So talk to us about, you know, what's the future? Does it involve different types of pets or are you just going to kind of stick with the canines and the dogs? Talk to us about where this is going.
I imagine eventually cats, just not in the foreseeable future, just because I don't have a cat and I like to feel really confident in our products, like I had a hand in it. And so until we find someone that I trust to handle that, probably no cats. 10-year vision for Ryokin Instinct, though, it's, for me, our brand is really about setting aside time for that, nurturing that human canine bond. It's maximizing spending time with your dog. It's recognizing that their lifespan is limited and making the most of all of those moments. And in the future, I hope to bring more awareness on ways that can happen, which include, you know, outdoor activities are one. A big one that I'm really passionate about is AKC events, so dog sports as well. I hope that we can break into that industry as well and even show more representation of millennials and Gen Z in AKC events, since it is largely boomers that participate. But it's really incredible the amount of effort that goes into building that bond with your dog when you do sports like that and do hikes with them and do training with them. And yeah, so just those active moments when your dog is able to see you, like I want that to be synonymous with our brand.
I like that. And, you know, there's a lot of open field here. Okay. Like there's a lot of space that, and this is, you know, we were kind of talking about this before. It's just like, you know, the creativity, this is the opportunity to when you create that brand, the opportunity is to create that open space, right? And so my quick thoughts on, or advice maybe to you right here is, you know, if you can imagine that open space of what a brand can, what a new brand can newly bring to the market, that's what creating that open field and open space is like. And you know, maybe even to kind of pull in, I don't know if you've heard the like blue ocean, red ocean type of concept, you know, that it's kind of a crude way to say it, but like major competition is like red ocean, meaning like all these like sharks or fish are like battling for basically competition. And they're like, you know, fighting. Hey, yeah. Go find that blue ocean. And the blue ocean is really like, no, we're going to go over here and create this whole different thing with this different experience. And all of a sudden you pull the market this way. So I think that there's opportunity. That seems to be what you're talking about there. And I like that. I like that, you know, like, you know, and I think, you know, it's a weird time. It's an exciting time. It's a weird time. And what is pet ownership or parenting, whatever word you want to use there, what does that look like in 10 years? You know, how much different is it? And so I think that that's up your opportunity.
Yeah, totally. Like that, you nailed it. Like it's just, you see all the competition in the pet space and it's already a saturated market. So how do you carve out space for yourself without having to compete with these big brands that have so much market share?
So, you know, on that topic, you know, what have you, we're kind of shifting into now your founder and startup experience. What has been your biggest challenge? There's a lot I could sit here and list off the 100 ones that we have at Founders Live as well. But, what has been, if you could maybe point to one that you're like, yeah, that's always been that's the thing that's our challenge right now.
I know this might not resonate with everyone, but for us, it's really been scaling. It's been so hard. Just the product itself, like the cleanliness of the ingredients because they're minimal, and then the shape of it, it's a really unique manufacturing or production process. So one, it's difficult to make by hand. It takes 3 days actually. You know, the 3 day long process, it's hard to go to a manufacturer and then want to take it on in their facility. So we've been trying to scale in like our commissary kitchen. But again, it's not like you can just make more easily. You need to add in more people just the way it's made. And if you go to a manufacturer, then you need to have such large runs. So for us, our biggest struggle has been operating in this middle space of knowing there's interest, but not having so much exposure that we can push this much product. So I guess if I were to give advice to someone doing a startup, after you've proven that there's like product market fit, think about how you're going to make more of your product or grow it. Like we didn't think of that when we started.
Well, and it really brings up a thought around, so you mentioned scaling and it's, the farther I go, and you know, it's been amazing to grow Founders Live and, you know, to really live it in terms of the ups and downs and the lessons. And, you know, I think we all, a lot of us founders want, you know, we just want it to happen very quickly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We all do. And trust me, it actually is it's perfect that you're here for a reason at this moment in time. And what I would say is it's okay to go a little slower and get it right. Like get it right at the beginning. And sometimes it feels like you're grinding and you're not going as fast as you want, but you're going to be thankful for that. And, you know, there's time to scale when you have the correct product with the correct ingredients and, you know, then figuring out how to improve your processes and all of that. So, I understand totally the, like, you know, we battle with it too, but, it's okay. It's okay.
That's great advice. No, I needed to hear that. So it's good.
It's okay. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's a weird time, and there's a lot of, you know, the unicorns that raised, you know, a lot of money, large rounds over the last few years. You know, I don't envy them with where they're at. And geez, the majority of them are either, you know, struggling or shutting down, right? And so, you know, be thankful for the place you're at and being scrappy, and, you know, it's okay, right? Like, the grass is not green on the other side. There's more challenges.
For sure. No, totally. Like, I'm grateful that we've taken this business to where it's gotten today. It's just, it's always easier to want more, but it's totally right to just be grateful for what you've accomplished.
Yeah. Well, let's go with, you know, in addition to what you just said, you know, if you're going to go back a few years and, you know, maybe tell your earlier self, or, you know, we're talking to someone that is maybe right at their beginning of their journey here, you know, what is one or two things that you've really learned, and what advice would you share to early stage founders?
Yeah, just be super, super clear on what pain point you're solving. And I know that's kind of like a broken record response, because it's what you'll read everywhere when you're like, how do I start a business? And then they ask you, what's the pain point you're solving? But really, that becomes the identity, the crux, or how you get people to listen to you. Because if you're not touching on an emotional response, if you're not able to relate to your demographic or make their life better, or kind of shuttle them towards a life that is what they want, then as much as you love your product or your business or whatever it is, it's gonna flop. So yeah, just be really, really clear on what you're trying to accomplish for people.
I think that's excellent. That is very excellent. And it's not as easy as you said, right? And so the challenge to you all founders is, you know, you got to keep going, keep digging, right? And, you know, a lot of times this happens a lot. Look, I travel a lot. I see a lot of our founders pitch events and all the pitches and all this. And, you know, I would say it's definitely less than, you know, I would say it's half, if not less, that I feel have tapped into what you just said. And, you know, there's sometimes you're halfway, or you're like,
it's like
there, but they haven't hit that pain point yet.
Yeah. It's like, they know they're solving something, but then, or like they're providing a service, right? But they don't know how that is relatable to a large demographic of people. And you're like, at the end of the day, your business is a service to people. So how are you serving, right? It's like, what are you delivering to them to improve? Like, So it's so important, but it gets glossed over.
It's so great. And more importantly, that the counterintuitive nature to a lot of founders and a lot of like, and by the way, I am naturally this way, which is like, you want to like help everyone, you know, you want to hit as many people as possible. You want to like have a big business. And so you're like, oh, we're this, we're that, we're that. And then we serve everyone.
Yeah.
Nope. And it's actually the counterintuitive decision here is to narrowly focus. And you say, hey, here's the issue. Here's the pain point for these people.
Yep.
And you can then expand from that later, you know? Yep. So that's a really great piece of advice there. I think that's amazing. And so, you know, I guess one of the last questions here is around, you know, your customer is not the end user. How do you go about that? How do you, because you're in a unique position, right? Is like you need to market to the families, the consumers that are buying this stuff, but your end user is actually the dogs that are eating it. And so the dogs are eating the dog food kind of concept here.
In theory, our end user is not the customer, but our end user does influence the customer. So when you get those dogs that are drooling, or those dogs that are like licking their lips and going crazy over our bars, they're pretty much an advocate for our business already, which is nice. But we really try to focus on like the benefits that you get as an owner when your dog is around for longer. So like in purchasing our bars, you've brought joy to your dog. And by extension, you have joy. Like you've now grown your relationship with your dog.
Yeah. So that's great. Well, Martha, this has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah, this was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
You're doing a great job. And so this is the URL. So this is where people go to find more information?
Yes.
Great. And if they are pet parents and dog parents, where is this available? Is there... if people are outside the United States, can they order it? Is there limitations? Like, talk to us about what the availability here.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're only selling in the U.S. right now. Just because it's a food product, it's pretty difficult to ship overseas. And again, we are manufacturing it by hand in our small little kitchen. So everything's pretty much on our website. But we are pretty fast at shipping. So I would say we're pretty close to like Amazon Prime. We go every day.
Well, good. There was an indication, and feel free to just, know, but when do you think could international commerce and shipping happen?
It really depends on this Coleman search. Like we've been searching high and low, but it's been tough trying to find a Coleman that meets our standards in terms of quality and is also able to meet us on those MOQs. Because again, we're still pretty small and growing. So just... that interim is tough.
Got it. Well, I'm sure you'll let everyone know when it's ready.
Definitely.
Well, great. Well, it's nice to have you here. Congratulations for winning Founders Live Bellevue. And just you have a great start to a great brand.
Thank you so much. It was honestly a pleasure connecting with Founders Live.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And everyone, hey, this is Founders Live Conversations. We thank you so much for joining us today. Heard about a great story coming out of Washington State and incredible dog food and healthy bars and all this. So great. Hey, we continue to do these. Either listen to our podcast or we have more of these conversations happening. So keep watching, keep listening, and share these with your friends. And until next time, everyone, enjoy.